This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Bob Haggerty. Welcome to Education Matters. I'm very excited to be able to talk to our first guest for...
Good morning and welcome to Community Matters. I'm Marcia Connett, your host, and I'm so glad you're with us today because I have two very special guests that you will definitely enjoy hearing from them. With me today is Kelly Scoggins, and Kelly is the executive director of the Racine Women for Racial Justice. And also with us is Marcia Bueller, and we were just saying there's never two Marcias in a room together, so we're excited about that. Marcia is the Justice Initiative Coordinator. So I think what we need to do to start is to talk a little bit about where the Racine Women for Racial Justice began, what led up to where we are today, a little bit about its history. So I don't know which one of you wants to jump in on that, but let's begin talking about the organization and how it began.
Okay. Hi, Marcia. Thanks for having us.
Oh, Kelly, we're glad you're here.
Thank you. Racine Women for Racial Justice is a women-led racial justice organization, and we were founded in 2019 by our founder, or co-founder, Mary Pucci. And Mary started the Racine Women for Racial Justice. It kind of started as a Facebook or social media group. There was an incident that happened in our community. There was a young man by the name of Tyrese West who was killed by Mount Pleasant police officer Eric Giese. Both Mary and the community were outraged that there were no criminal charges brought against the officer for Tyrese's death. Mary started a social media post kind of talking about her surprise and outrage that nothing happened. Other people jumped in, and from there just kind of started a conversation. And from there we had our first event called Courageous Conversations. And from there we knew that there was an interest for women who wanted to get involved with racial justice work. Women wanted to know, what can I do to help be a part of, you know, creating a transformation? And so we started the group in 2020. We put together an organizing board. We formed the organization and became a nonprofit organization in 2020. Right now, our Facebook group has about 1,300 women that are connected to our group. And so we're really excited to be that, have that space there where women can come and learn more about racial justice issues, especially going on in Racine, and across the country as well, and have a place for them to have a voice.
I should just jump in and add that Mary is white, and many of the women in the organization, I'm white as well, many of the women in the organization are, and part of the mission is to reach out to white women and help them understand what's going on in the community. I have to say, personally, I was extremely unaware of how much racism we have locally, how people of color are impacted by that, by over-policing, by all forms of discrimination. And through this work, I was a member of the founding board, I should say, and through this work, I've had my eyes opened as to what's really going on in the community and how great the need is to educate people and to really encourage white people to stand up and, not tolerate these types of things going on. But it all begins first with education. If you don't know what's happening, you can't really do anything about it. And so that's what our organization, it's one of our primary focuses, is to bring women of color together with white women to expose the issues and, you know, help people understand what they need to do to improve that in our community.
Most definitely. Well, in 6 years, I can't believe it's 6 years since the Tyrese incident. What other kind of high-profile things has the Racine Women for Racial Justice gotten involved with? And how are you educating people? What does that look like?
I think our we're known for organizing probably the largest nonviolent protest in our community in connection to the George Floyd murder. So we held a rally that started at Gateway all the way to the courthouse, and that had about 800 people from our community, people from all walks of life, diverse, you know, ethnicities. And so that was our first major initiative, the March for George Floyd. Also, like I said, we've had several events called Courageous Conversations, in which we bring together, again, women of color with women of power, is what we like to call them, typically white women, bring us together and have critical conversations about race. And so we have those. Then
one case that we got heavily involved in had to do with a young man named Malcolm James, who was killed in the jail. I believe it was 2 years ago. Was it two or three, Kelly?
2022.
So 3 years ago. And it was a situation involving, you know, him having a mental health crisis, and everything being handled wrong, leading actually tragically to his death. And so we were there to support the family. We were there to inform the community. We held rallies. We testified before the county board to make sure they understood what was happening in this situation. And, you know, we were there to make sure that this didn't fall under the radar. It was communicated to the community, to our members, to anybody that we could reach what had happened in this case. And unfortunately, that is not an isolated case. There are, you know, tragically, there's, you know, many of these types of situations, but we were there when it was announced that there were going to be no charges against the officers responsible for his death. We reported on that, and as I said, we were there to support the family and make sure that the community understood what had happened in that case.
Do you think by doing what you do, which is so critically important, it's maybe shining a light? And I so often think about, you know, these mental health crises that individuals have that are misread as being, you know, aggressive or whatever. Do you think, I mean, are we beginning to see our law enforcement understanding and maybe learning or being sensitized to this sort of thing?
Well, we took the opportunity of this case to really work with the county board to educate them about the lack of services. And I don't know if you're aware, and I don't think we can take 100% credit for this, but mental health services in the Racine County are being, beefed up, basically. And we've seen the county start to take that seriously. And, you know, I think that that came about as a result of the the efforts that we made to have our members speak at county board meetings, to show up, to support this, to identify the gaps. And it was one way that we were able to influence a piece of change in the community that I think will have long-lasting effects.
That's really encouraging to hear. That's really encouraging to hear.
Yeah, I think also just to kind of piggyback off of what Marcia said, we did meet with the county executive several times to talk about the need to have crisis responders accompany police officers when they get those types of calls. And again, we can't take 100% credit, but we do believe that our work in meeting with the county executive, and as Marcia said, the board, and just gathering the data and really just kind of shining the light and putting a little community pressure, we've seen them add this critical piece when there are mental health issues, to have crisis responders and to encourage the police officers to receive this training. And so that training is now happening, and more officers are getting this training. So
That is wonderful to hear. Well, and I think even for those of us in the community to understand that this is kind of a different, horse of a different color. This is a situation that, and I love that we're having mental health people going out in these situations. So we've heard so many stories from across the country. A mother or a spouse or a partner will call and say, my son, my whatever, is having a mental health crisis. He's having a breakdown, and law enforcement often can come unequipped to handle that. So to know that that this is happening in our community, that the right stuff is happening, that is really, really encouraging to hear.
And so we're hoping too that they will continue this work, because we continue to receive reports of individuals that are incarcerated in our county jail that may not be in a crisis, but they have mental health issues. They are not getting their medication. They are not being allowed to see psychiatrists, so there's no treatment, and they are just being housed. And so we're hoping that the county will continue to expand services to the county jail to ensure people that have a medically diagnosed mental illness and that are going into the jail with mental health issues and medication, that they get both the medication and the treatment while they are incarcerated. It is very crucial to their overall well-being.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, to the well-being of the other inmates, of the staff, of the jailers, everybody is in danger when someone who needs medication isn't getting it. Is there something that we as the public can do? Is there someone we should talk to? I mean, obviously, we should be talking to each other about it so that we're aware. But is there a path to the right person that we could?
I would suggest that everybody that's concerned about these issues familiarize themselves with who their representative is on the county board, who is the supervisor that represents where they live, and start to connect with that person. Start to send them emails. Show up at a county board meeting. The first 30 minutes of any county board meeting are set aside for public comment. And it can be about anything. It doesn't have to be about anything on the agenda. It can be about any topic that is of concern. So all you have to do is come to the meetings. I believe they're at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays. The schedule is on the county website. I don't have that offhand, but they're typically on Tuesday evenings once a month. And you just sign up, and you can speak for 3 minutes on any topic. So, if these things are resonating with anybody that's listening today, write an email to your supervisor. Let them know that you understand that more is needed and that there's issues in the jail and we need, further mental health support there. show up at a meeting, and it can be, you know, just a quick comment, but if they know that people in the public are aware of these issues and they care about these issues, it doesn't take a lot of people to speak up for them to realize, okay, you know, we need to pay attention to this. When nobody comes and speaks up, they think everything is fine and nobody cares. That's really the bottom line.
Yeah. And yeah, and we would encourage people to start to attend those meetings now so that you can start having your input, because in October is when the board votes on the budget every year. And so it's important to know, again, where are dollars being spent, you know, to hear the budget from both the county, the Director of Human Services, who's over some of our mental health services, to hear the budget request from the Racine County Jail. And so people can take note of that and be able to speak to the changes that need to occur. So we encourage people to go, start going to those meetings now, start listening, start asking questions, and start commenting and sending emails to your board's representative.
Oh, so worthwhile. So worthwhile. And really kind of easy to do.
Absolutely.
And if I can't get to a county board meeting, even a phone call to my representative, is that okay?
Absolutely. A phone call, an email, even, like you said, just calling their office and just stating, you know, your viewpoint and making sure that they know you live in their district.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great. So I want at some point to talk about how your organization may be responding to what's going on in our world right now. But I'm obviously referencing what's happening in Los Angeles and all of that sort of thing. But what are the current initiatives that Racine Women for Racial Justice are working on? What can we support you in? What can we jump on the bandwagon for?
Sure.
Where do we go?
I can start with our Justice Initiative is involved in a group that pulls from other organizations in the community as well. It's called Participatory Defense Network. And this is, we have a chapter, so to speak, in Racine. It's about a year and a half old now, and it's underneath the auspices of a national organization based in California. And the purpose of it is to provide assistance and support, not from a legal perspective, but from a support perspective to people who are either going through the justice system themselves or have a friend or loved one that is in the system. And so we hold weekly meetings every Monday at 5 p.m. at the Racine Public Library that are open to anyone that has any issues with the judicial system. So that could be somebody who had been arrested and is out on bond. Could be the family or friends of somebody who is still in jail because they weren't granted bond or can't make bond. People that are in any stage of the process, even people post-conviction who may be, you know, appealing a sentence or, you know, anywhere along the line. And so we have folks that have been in the system. They're ex-incarcerated. They understand the system really well. They can speak to, you know, what to expect when you go to a hearing in court, you know, what's happening. People don't really even understand what is happening to me when I go before the judge for these hearings. What are they, you know, what should I do? How should I prepare? We have a terrible problem in our community, well, probably Wisconsin as a whole, with a lack of public defenders that are available, so people often can't get a lawyer. They're languishing in jail if they can't make bond, or they're out on bond, but their cases are unresolved for months to years due to the lawyers. So it's a big problem. We also have people that do court observing. They go to court, they watch what's happening with these cases, with, you know, whatever's happening in court, and One whole group that's affiliated with Racine Interfaith Coalition has been watching initial appearances. You can watch those on Zoom, and they've been gathering data. There's a project funded by a grant from Microsoft to gather data about when people make their initial appearance, that would be when they're granted bond or not, and what the amount is. And so we've been gathering data now to try to understand, is there any type of racial disparity between defendants? You know, what crimes have been committed? You know, what's the background, as much as can be gathered from these hearings? And so we're in the analysis phase now of trying to understand, you know, is there a way to document what we anecdotally seems to be an issue in the Racine County court system of unfair treatment of people of color. But, you know, the data here, once analyzed, will help us figure that out. So we provide support in a number of ways. As I said, we go to court with families. We, you know, if they need us to come to a meeting with a lawyer, we can provide somebody to do that, just to help them navigate the system. And, you know, the goal is not to get criminals off the hook. That's not the goal. The goal is to make sure that people get a fair shake in the system. If they've committed a crime, that they plead to something that's reasonable, that they don't, you know, there's a lot of instances where the charges are, crimes are overcharged. There's things piled on that, you know, add time to the person's ultimate sentence that are unnecessary. And so it's helping them navigate all that. And, you know, if they've committed the crime, you know, what is the fairest sentence they can get for that? And through understanding the process and understanding the system and, you know, working that to their advantage. So we don't want to see criminals go unpunished, but we don't want them overpunished. And I guess that's the reason that we're doing the work. And again, as a white person who was utterly unaware of all of the unfairnesses, so to speak, in the system, I've been shocked at what I've seen and what I've learned from being involved in this for the past year and a half.
Yeah, and I think that the difficult part of it is it's not just here. This is something that's happening across the country, although we know that this part of Wisconsin, Racine, Milwaukee is especially hard on people of color. So that's amazing.
And I think I want to add to that, since you brought that up, Marcia, that Wisconsin has the highest incarceration rate across the country when you look at per capita. You know, we incarcerate more people than any other state in the country. And we incarcerate more people of color than those states as well. And so Marcia talked about the over-policing in our neighborhoods, where police are actually just parked or posted up on blocks, just running license plates, looking at the little light bulb on your license plate cover, you know, just over-policing and looking for ways to stop people. So we're being over-policed. Then, of course, with that, where there are more arrests, there are things that maybe you would get a warning for or get a ticket for. So there's an over-arresting. And then once gets to the court, there's an overcharging. Marcia mentioned that. So they're adding modifiers and enhancers to, let's say you get into a fight, right, and that could normally be a disorderly conduct or a simple battery. So, no, they're adding enhancers to make it not only a felony, but that enhancer carries additional prison time as well. So what happens to an individual, you're told you're faced with this one charge, and it carries 10 years, for instance, and then the enhancer carries another 6 years. So you're looking at 16 years, and so you're being threatened with that, and then you're offered a plea for 10 years. People are pleading out cases because, like Marcia said, they're sitting in jail for a year before they even get a public defender. You know, the jail has inhumane conditions. So after being in there months, eating horrible food, it's deplorable conditions, not sanitary or unsanitary conditions. People are ready to exit the county jail, and they're desperately taking pleas because they really don't know what their future looks like. And so we, as that's part of the work of our justice initiative, is to really increase awareness. We like to say shining the light, because like Marcia said, she's not the only white woman that has been unaware of what's going on. Most people in our community do not really understand, you know, what's really going on in our legal system and in our jails.
Absolutely. I can give you a quick example. I was in court a few weeks ago. Okay. Is that okay?
Go ahead. Yeah, finish your thought, and then we're going to take a break.
Yeah, I was in court, and there was a fourth OWI case. There were two men. One was Hispanic, and one was white. And the cases were separated by maybe 30 minutes. And the facts were identical in both cases, and yet the Hispanic man got 6 months more time in prison than the white man did. And, you know, it was just stunning to me, you know, that I had seen this now over and over again. You know, I won't go into all the details, but it happens, and it's not anybody's imagination that it happens.
Yeah, this is not playing the race card. Absolutely.
It is not, no.
Right. Oh, amazing. We're going to take a very quick break to remind people they're listening to Community Matters here on WGTD. My guests today are Kelly Scoggins and Marcia Bueller from the Racine Women for Racial Justice. And this is an absolutely fascinating and somewhat disturbing conversation about what's going on in our community. So anything more that's happening right now, other initiatives that you're working on?
Yeah, we're not being recorded, right?
Yeah, we are.
We'll all be recorded. Okay, I thought we took a break. Okay.
Yes, we're moving right along.
We're moving right along. Yes, so, yeah, Marcia, one of the things that our Justice Initiative is involved in is we all know, well, most of us may know, that on May 7th, there was an incident that happened at Waterford Union High School in which Milwaukee School, Rufus King, they had a track meet with Waterford. And during the track meet, there were racial slurs being, you know, thrown out to the Rufus King track team and their family members. Rufus King is a predominantly black school, so there were the N-word. They were called monkeys. They were making monkey sounds. They were accused of being gangbangers and, you know, just a very hostile environment. And as a result, Rufus King coaches and parents made a decision to remove their children from that environment. And I think it's interesting because we're talking about children. They're in high school, so they're children. Mm-hmm. And the environment was so hostile that their parents and coaches had to make a decision to forfeit the track meet.
Wow.
And so that has been a concern for a lot of people across the state, but in particular us here in Racine County. And so Racine Women for Racial Justice has really been working with other justice organizations to kind of community build and to create an alliance where all of us are, you know, really looking at this situation, what happened. We've been doing some investigating. So it's been the Racine Women for Racial Justice, Unity Racine, Coming Together Racine, the Burlington Coalition for Dismantling Racism, Olympia Brown Unitarian Church, their 8th Principal Committee, First Presbyterian, Racine Interfaith Coalition,
mm-hmm.
all of these organizations coming together, along with the NAACP, really taking a look at what happened, and now we are working collectively to create a strategy that will hold both the Waterford administration accountable as well as the WIAA. It's not enough to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. These incidents have happened before. They continue to occur in rural schools. It happened at Waterford many times before. We have reports from students, white students, who have told us that it's even they are just kind of devastated and distraught over what is happening in the schools. They are witnessing black and brown children being called the N-word, you know, taunting at school, and parents having to make a decision to withdraw their children, and nothing's happening. And so that is of grave concern to all of our organizations, and we are working together to create some strategies in which we are demanding actual accountability and looking for policy change the way the WIAA deals with these incidents that happen at these sporting events, which is where a lot of them occur. Typically, the WIAA has said, we'll let the school take care of it. We'll let them address it. But when you have a forfeiture, when a school like Rufus King leaves, Waterford shouldn't get the win. If you created the hostile environment, you were the ones demonstrating the behavior that caused the school to have to forfeit. There should be some penalties. There should be some penalties to the school. And so that is a grave concern to our community. And Marcia maybe will tell you a little bit more about the county board.
Yeah. So we just spoke a few minutes ago about the importance of contacting the county board about things that are of concern. And two supervisors this past week, Jody Spencer and Eric Hopkins, proposed a resolution where the county board would acknowledge that this incident happened and that it's unacceptable, and basically go on record as, that this is the sort of behavior that isn't tolerable in Racine County. It didn't require the board to really do anything in terms of, punishing anybody, but it really was just an ask that we go on record as, understanding that this happened and that, this is not acceptable. Unfortunately, even though quite a number of us came to speak in favor of it, the board elected to table that resolution.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly how it will if it will ever come to light again, but the resolution is 2025-15. I believe it's
22.
2025-15, I believe. Mm-hmm. Kelly will correct me if I'm wrong there, but
okay, great.
But it is as of Monday or Tuesday, it was still available on the county board website under the agenda for the meeting that was just held this past Tuesday. So it would be great if constituents would reach out to their supervisors and let them know that it is important for the county board to take a stand on issues like this. These things are important to our community. We do not want to live in a community that condones this kind of behavior. That just isn't healthy for any of us.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Can you speak on that?
No. I was going to say that, we believe that the tabling of this resolution was a very strategic maneuver. No, Marcia, you're absolutely right. It is 2025-15 that was authored and co-authored by Eric Hopkins and Jody Spencer. And we do believe that our county board should make a public statement. Mm-hmm. To remain silent is to be complicit. There were speculations that our board our executive committee made the decision to table it because they were concerned that that it was addressing the Waterford issue, and there were other schools present that could have also been a part of the racial slurs and name calling. And it's not a calling out of just Waterford. It is making a public stand or statement against these type of racial situations occurring. And so we do feel that they should. They absolutely should make a public statement saying that they are in opposition of this type of racial behavior. So it's been tabled. So they could very strategically table it forever. It may never see the light of day. So if people would be willing to reach out to their supervisors and mention that they want this resolution, you know, brought before the full board and want it passed immediately and not table it for the next few months or 6 months until it kind of dies down. I think that's right. Part of the strategy.
Well, it sounds like that may indeed be the case. But and it also sounds a little bit like they're afraid to actually have a vote to hold those supervisors accountable for their stance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's a way to not go on record
exactly.
as voting in opposition of the resolution. So, hey, if we just table it, it'll never come before the board and we won't have to make a vote and no one will know how we feel. And I think that, you know, I think that's a dishonor to people of color, you know.
And I think it speaks to a larger issue in the country right now, which is that our leadership from the, you know, from the Oval Office has taken many steps to eradicate DEI programs, to you know, to do whatever they can think of, basically, to stop people from addressing racism in our communities. And, you know, we've made so much progress over the past several decades in addressing this problem. We certainly haven't solved it, but, you know, we definitely made strides. And it feels as if so much of that progress is being erased right now. And, you know, when an incident like this happens, and even the elected county supervisors are unwilling to do something really, to me, as simple as say, hey, that was wrong. Mm-hmm. We are in a new era, folks, and this isn't where we want to be. We don't want to go backwards. We don't want to have all of that racist rhetoric be acceptable. Absolutely not. And there are many of us in this community that will not stand for that. And we want these people who are elected and represent us to stand up and say this is wrong and we will not be a community that endorses this kind of behavior tacitly by not even speaking up about it.
Right.
So I don't think it takes, you know, a great deal of courage to just say, hey, this was wrong and, you know, we're willing to go on record and we don't subscribe to, you know, the new rhetoric that says nobody should be talking about this. We need to talk about it more than ever.
Most definitely. And I think it sends a message to our children.
Absolutely.
You know, if this sort of behavior is condoned by adults, it tells our children that, hey, this is okay. You can use those words. You can pick on people of color, whether they're brown or black or yellow or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it really is critical that our county board and others in power stand up to make certain that we're setting the right example for our kids.
Absolutely. I mean, to say nothing, to remain silent on such a critical issue really speaks volumes of the racial problem that we have in this county. Because as we know now, Racine was deemed as the second worst place in the country for African Americans. We have now moved to number three. And when you look at the five systems that they reviewed for us, education is one of those systems. And one of the reasons why is because the education system in Wisconsin, you know, is racially flawed, you know. And so to not address this, to not make a public stance against racism,
right.
overt racism, and our county supervisors won't say anything, that is a problem.
Definitely.
And I guess I would also add, too, that, you know, it's even beyond racism. We know so much more these days about trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this type of incident is traumatic to the students that were subjected to it. And, you know, just from a standpoint of human decency, you know, these athletes, you know, these, let's face it, you know, when the Olympics come around every 4 years, you know, who's winning most of the medals? The African-American athletes, right? And we're cheering for them and, you know, it's It's all about, you know, our pride in our country. And to have something like this happen at an athletic event is traumatizing for these young athletes. Are they gonna, you know, go on to be able to perform at their highest level? I don't know, you know.
Right.
We don't know how that affects people to be treated that way. And especially after, you know, you've kind of grown up expecting that sort of thing isn't acceptable. And now suddenly we backslid to the point where we're seeing so much of this happening and people being brazen about it.
In so many levels, right?
Yeah, it's
right.
Wrong and it's traumatic for these kids.
Yeah. And I want to say that the Waterford administration has gone on record to say that the way that they intend to address this is by inviting the students from Rufus King to share a meal with some of the students that were identified as making racial slurs, and to share a meal so they can discuss what happened, so that the Waterford students can be enlightened on how that their behavior made somebody else feel. I think that is utterly ridiculous. Nobody has to tell you how that makes another person feel. Those children, those community members that called people the N-word and monkeys, they knew very well how that was going to make those students feel. They knew that they were creating a hostile environment that would have an effect on the outcome of that track meeting. So Marcia talked about the trauma that the young people that were at that school experienced. But what about the rest of us in communities of color? You know, us having to relive another incident where we were offended, where we experienced the injustice, and nobody does anything. That right. is traumatizing for the entire communities of color.
Exactly. We've only got a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that we have time for you to tell us how, if people want to be involved with your group, they can connect to you. So what's the best way if I want to join in with some of these things? How do I get a hold of you?
First, you should go to our website, www.rwrj.org, and there is a tab on there where you can submit your name if you're interested in getting involved. And that's one of the quickest ways. We are currently putting together an initiative where we are going to be recruiting for new board members, and we are going to be recruiting for community members. So reach out to us at www.rwrj.org. Follow us on Facebook. It is a private group, so follow us there if you're a woman. And then we are going to be sending out email blasts and public service announcements and press releases just so everyone knows on how they can get involved with us in the future.
And if Wonderful. You want to join our Facebook group, just be sure to answer the questions, because a lot of people go on there and express interest and they don't answer the questions and we can't admit them. So
right.
Got to keep those bots at bay.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're coming in every day. I know, I see them. This has been absolutely fascinating. I can't thank you two enough for carving out time to share the work that you're doing, to hold up a mirror to some of the things that are going on in our community that maybe are hard to hear, but that we need to know. So thank you. I hope you'll come back.
We will. Absolutely. If you invite us, we'll come. Thank you, okay. Mark, for having us.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely our pleasure. So thank you. And thanks to all of you who've joined us this morning on Community Matters. We'll talk to you again soon.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine.